This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. A report in the Fort Myers News Press alleges that the city of Fort Myers dumped toxic sludge on a piece of land in the Dunbar neighborhood decades ago, didn't tell anyone about it, nor was it ever cordoned off or cleaned up. In the second half of our show today, we'll talk with the reporter who filed that story and with a pastor who lives in the neighborhood about that property and how the community plans to move forward. But first, in the era of citrus greening, some are forecasting the end of Florida citrus, writing epitaphs reminiscing about the glory days. The Atlantic even published an article entitled Florida Without Citrus. But the director of the University of Florida's Citrus Research and Education Center says not so fast. Dr. Michael Rogers is at the helm of the institution, which has been steadily and resolutely finding solutions for Florida's citrus issues for the past 10 decades. And while citrus greening is definitely a big issue, there were working on some solutions. Dr. Rogers joins us now to talk a little about some of those solutions and to give us some background on citrus in Florida. Dr. Rogers, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me on today.
We are talking about citrus in Florida. What has led to where we are now and where we're headed going forward? Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. First, Dr. Rogers, can you start us out by giving a brief little history lesson? When did oranges come to Florida?
Well, oranges actually came to Florida probably in the mid-1500s when the Spanish explorers first arrived in Florida. And Ponce de Leon is credited with planting some of the first citrus trees in the St. Augustine area of Florida. But in the 400 years since that time, you know, citrus took hold as a commodity. In the late 1800s, with the improvements in transportation, new markets opened across the country, and the demand for citrus grew quite a bit. And so that's where the University of Florida came in the early, around 1917, the Florida legislature authorized the establishment of a research station just to address the needs of the Florida citrus industry that was just developing at the time. And there was, citrus being a relatively new crop at that time to Florida, there was a lot of pest and disease problems and issues that growers were facing. And so the legislature saw the need to establish a research center to address those needs and help that fledgling industry at that time get started and form into the $9 billion industry that we now see in Florida.
So when did it become big business? Is it at the advent of orange juice?
Well, definitely the advent of orange juice helped a lot, and that was really post-World War II when they developed frozen concentrate. And that was actually developed through the research group of the Florida Department of Citrus, which is also housed here at the Citrus Research Station in Lake Alfred. And that really helped to distribute frozen concentrate to new markets around the country. And so that really helped speed up the adoption of orange juice as a healthy beverage for your morning breakfast.
So are there any citrus plants at all that are indigenous to Florida?
All the citrus varieties, at least the ones that we grow commercially that you would, use for fruit or juice production, have all been imported. Starting back with the Spanish explorers and other varieties that we've brought in over time from other countries, because citrus originated in the area of China. And so really all the diversity in citrus varieties we have has been brought from those regions of Asia through Spain.
How diverse is citrus in Florida? I mean, how much is dedicated, for example, to oranges versus grapefruits versus lemons and limes?
Okay, well, in the recent times, we've seen about 90%, maybe 95% of our industry in Florida is for juice production. And so those are sweet oranges, round oranges, things like Valencia and Hamlin. The other 5 to 10% are fresh fruit varieties, things like your tangerines and navels, grapefruit, and some other specialty fruit like lemons and limes in certain southern parts of the state.
So can you tell me, like, historically, what are some of the innovations that the Research and Education Center came up with to address problems of the past?
Well, there's been a lot of work done, a very diverse amount of work, because we have faculty working in all different disciplines from ag engineering and plant pathology to entomology, plant breeding. So there's a lot of things to talk about. But if you look from the earliest beginnings of our station, a lot of the work was focused on just some real basics, understanding how to grow citrus in Florida, because the growers at the time didn't have good guidance on things such as fertilization, you know, what do you need to do to grow a tree, irrigation, things like that. And so some of the earliest work was focused on just giving recommendations on how to grow and care for a citrus tree. Over time, we made a lot of advances, in especially in areas like pest control. There was the disease in the 1950s called spreading decline, which there was no solution for. And over time, our researchers here found out that that spreading decline was actually caused by a nematode, which is kind of like a very small microscopic worm in the soil that affects the root system of the plants. And so we're able to develop programs to combat that pest, as well as other pests. Probably a lot of people are familiar with the term biological control, where you use good insects to eat the bad, if you will. And a lot of the early beginnings of biological control that are used in other crops actually came from citrus, where that was the citrus was the first crop that biocontrol was really used in.
What makes citrus so susceptible to these things? It seems like citrus has just always got one thing after another coming after the crops.
Yeah, and part of it has to do with the fact that if we're here in Florida, we have a subtropical environment. So anything that comes into Florida is probably going to survive pretty well. I mean, we talk about, you know, insects and diseases that get in that affect citrus. You know, the same is true if you look down the Everglades with pythons and things like that. Things just survive so well in Florida. And so every new pest that comes in is a potential problem for citrus.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one we're dealing with now is citrus green. That became a big issue a few years ago when it first appeared in Florida. Were scientists aware of how bad that was going to be?
Yes, we've always said that was the one disease we did not want in Florida. It's historically been known as the worst disease worldwide of citrus. And it was really confined for the past 100 years to the Eastern Hemisphere in areas like, you know, Asia, you know, China, India, places like that. And it wasn't until 2004 when it was found for the first time in the Western Hemisphere in Brazil, and then in 2005 in Florida. And so we were very concerned when we found out it had arrived in Florida.
And I think on the scale of world production, Brazil is the only other one that kind of compares with Florida as far as production in oranges, correct?
Yes, yes. Brazil would be the number one producer of oranges for juice. And, of course, that's the country of Brazil. The state of Florida is number two in the world.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask, you know, as far as recent memory is concerned, can you tell me, as a former Midwesterner who doesn't obviously work in oranges, what's the difference between a canker and greening, the citrus canker?
So citrus canker, it's a bacterial disease, but it is more on the surface of the plant, and it's spread by windblown rain. So in 2004, everybody remembers the hurricanes we had here. There was some canker they were trying to eradicate citrus canker from Florida, and they almost had it done. It was in a small area in southeast Florida, but when the hurricanes came in, it blew the bacteria all across the state. But again, that's a surface disease. You know, it only affects the surface of leaves and fruit, but it does cause the fruit to drop. Now, with citrus greening, the difference is it is a bacterium, but it's spread by an insect, and it moves within the vascular, like the plant's veins, if you will. It moves internally in the plant and causes it to die over time.
Yeah, it's been really rough, too. I mean, how much of an impact has that had on the industry?
It's had a tremendous impact. Just a few years prior to the discovery of citrus greening in Florida, if you go back a couple of years before the hurricanes, because we lost some fruit during the hurricane years in 2004, 2005, but I think it was 2003, we were probably around 220 to 240 million boxes of fruit per year produced in Florida. Now, this year, we're somewhere around 70 million boxes of fruit produced.
Wow.
This year. And that decline is primarily due to citrus greening, because we've lost a lot of trees, and the trees that we have become less productive.
That's an incredible hit to a very big industry.
Yes. No, it is definitely having an impact. It's causing people to rethink how they grow citrus. You know, and a lot of people are having to make tough choices on how much longer they can stay in the citrus industry, and, you know, at least in the short term. But I think everybody is very optimistic about the long term, hoping that, you know, once solutions are found to this disease, that there'll be opportunities to get back in and see those production numbers rise again.
Yeah. I mean, are they still kind of on the decline at this point?
Well, I think we're all a little optimistic that maybe we've leveled out.
Okay.
And we don't know, but we've seen those numbers decline, and they seem to kind of be stabilizing right now. We hope that's the case.
Has there ever been anything this bad or this devastating to the citrus industry in the past?
Not that's been realized. Not really. We've had things in the past where there's been other diseases like citrus blight, citrus tristeza. Those are two diseases that when they came in, everybody thought, okay, that's going to end the citrus industry. And we've been able to find, at least in the case of citrus tristeza, there were solutions that were developed for that. With citrus greening disease, it takes a much bigger hit on the industry. We're learning a lot about the disease and developing short-term solutions right now that have helped growers hang on. But it's a much more difficult disease to deal with than the ones we've had in the past.
It is really tough. And we've done a number of stories on the pest that spreads this greening disease. It's a psyllid. And your background's in entomology, which is studying insects. Do you think that the solution to greening is going to be going after the bug or innovating with more resistant citrus plants?
As an entomologist, I'd love to say it's going after the bug, but I really think that the ultimate solution is going to come in the form of a tree that can resist the disease. Something that you can plant and forget about it, because we can't afford to continue to put more and more dollars into a crop. It just gets really expensive.
The cost of fighting it. You have to really baby those trees to even keep them limping along.
Yes, absolutely.
Once they get it.
Well,
if you're just joining the show, we're talking with Dr. Mike Rogers. He's the director of the University of Florida Citrus Research and Education Center, and this is the center's 100th anniversary. We're talking about a future forecast for citrus in the state. Do you have a comment or a question? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So instead of doom and gloom, let's look ahead to potential citrus candidates who can withstand the greening. What has the research center found so far?
Well, there's been a number of things as far as tolerant varieties, I'll say. Not something that's completely resistant, but some plants that have been developed that seem to tolerate the disease a little bit better. Some of the first two that have been released from the University of Florida are actually fresh fruit varieties. They're not the ones that were grown for juice that 90% of our industry wants to grow. But there's two new ones. They're mandarin, kind of like your tangerine-type varieties. One is called a sugar bell, and the other one, most recently, that's in the process of being released, is called a bingo. And those are two that, over time, they've been growing in the field for more than a decade. And when you walk through a grove and you see all these trees declining, these trees will stand out because they just don't seem to be affected hardly at all by this disease. They continue to produce fruit that tastes very good. It looks great. And the trees just aren't declining. So those are some promising things in terms of fresh fruit.
And those
that
are called,
seeing right now.
They're called sugar bells and bingos?
Yes.
And would those compare to things like the halos or the cuties?
The bingo variety would definitely compare to the halos and cuties that we know from California that are really small snack-sized pieces of fruit. The big difference here, though, is ours tastes much better than what you get from California on those halos and cuties. So we're excited about that.
And you've done a couple of tests on this. Tell me about how those taste tests went.
Yeah, we have a lot of our scientists will do these blind taste tests where people will come in and they're given a couple pieces of fruit. They don't know what they are, and you know, ask different things to rate the fruit on as far as appearance, how easy they peel, do they taste good, the sweetness. And the bingo in this case, when we're talking about comparing it to the clementines from California, those halos and cuties, the bingo always wins. I mean, it's 100% everybody wants that bingo over the fruit, the halos and cuties.
Well, that sounds promising. Do you think those are going to be on the shelf anytime soon?
They're just now in the process of being released, so it's going to take a while to get nursery production up and then growers put those, you know, start planting those new varieties. And, you know, from the time you plant a tree till you start harvesting fruit can take 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
So it'll be a little while before you see a large amount of those in the supermarket. There may be some small quantities available sooner than that, but But you're looking at several years out before you're going to be able to enjoy that from your local supermarket.
But this is great because this is where the farmers are able to rely on something like your research center, because you did all the footwork to identify this plant, and you have all that research behind it saying this tree does well, and here's how you need to grow it, and here's the results. So they haven't had to go through and filter through a whole bunch of different varietals to figure out what might work.
Yeah, in this case, we definitely found two pretty quickly, but there is still work going on to do what you just said, looking at all the suite of plants that we have in the field and understand which ones are likely to be good solutions for growers in the future. And there's been a number of new varieties that have been identified that are juice fruit, that, you know, 90% of our industry grows oranges for juice, for orange juice. And so there's some new varieties coming that have shown maybe not resistance, but tolerance. And by tolerance, I mean they get the disease, but they can still grow through it a little bit longer. They'll last and live a little bit longer and produce fruit for a longer period of time.
And
so there's some of those coming as well.
And actually be able to produce a decent, you know, amount of fruit instead of just barely any. We have a call coming in from Tom in Naples who has a question. Tom, what would you like to ask?
Oh, if they've tested, are agricultural antibiotics, like tetracycline and streptomycin, are they not effective on citrus screening?
Okay, that's a good question. So Tom has a question. He's asking, you know, are there antibiotics you can give to a plant?
Okay, there's some work that's being done through a group called the Citrus Research and Development Foundation, and they are actually working with some companies who've developed these products that are used in other crops, like apples, for example. And the idea is to see if we apply these to citrus trees, will it, you know, kill the bacteria, extend the life of the trees? These trials have only been going on in the field now large scale for the past, you know, year on the large scale trials. And right now the results are still inconclusive, because what's going to have to happen, it's probably going to take a couple of years before they know, does it work? Because the idea is that they're going to have to make repeated applications of these products to continually kill off the bacteria, with the hopes that the tree does recover. And so right now I think the jury's still out on how effective those are going to be, because really we're looking at probably, you know, needing two good solid years of use before we would expect to see the plants recover. So we're about halfway through those trials right now, and I know there's a lot of people who are hopeful that they work, but right now it's a little too early to say definitively yes or no on that.
Have you seen in small-scale trials yet if any trees have been able to recover? I mean, I know it needs to work on a large scale, because we're talking about a $9 billion a year industry here. But on just like a one or two plants, have you seen it have any results?
Yeah, there's definitely been some trials that have shown promising results. And then that's the reason that we've gone to these larger scale trials in the industry. Mm-hmm. Because on a small scale, there have been results that are promising, where they see the trees appear to turn around and produce more fruit. But again, you know, it's the results have been kind of mixed. Sometimes they've seen positive results. Sometimes they don't see a positive effect. And so that's the purpose of doing some more of the large scale trials, is to understand, you know, what should a grower expect under real world growing conditions.
Yeah, it is a big difference. It's not an annual crop like a field of corn or anything. This, you got to take your time. So how much of technological innovations changed things for the citrus industry?
Quite a bit. I mean, over the past, even just the most recent 10, 15 years, things have changed a lot. We're getting more efficient with how we use our crop protection chemicals, whether it's pesticides or even fertilizers, being able to, you know, deliver exactly how much is needed to the tree and try to reduce waste. From the standpoint of developing new varieties, there's a lot of new tools and methods that we can actually speed up some of the research that's being done. And so, we've advanced a lot in our technology. And it's interesting, because you mentioned technology. Getting back to greening, this disease, you know, has been around for more than 100 years in places like China. And it wasn't until probably the 50s they realized it was a bacterium. And then more recently, with some of the work that's been done, now we're understanding how the bacteria moves in the tree and how it causes decline in fruit by actually affecting the root system of the tree first. So there's been a lot of advances made even in the past 10 years. So I'd just say we know a lot more than we did even a decade ago.
Is there a dream technology that you think would make a big difference in citrus?
Well, I think one of the things that people are most excited about is some of the work with gene editing. And that's just something very new in the past, you know, 5, 6, 7 years that's come around, where they can go in and actually look at a tree, a plant, any kind of plant or animal for that matter. But let's say in the case of citrus, they can find out what genes are responsible for a disease response. So let's say in this case in citrus greening, what genes cause the plant to respond negatively and die. And they just go in and turn those genes off. They're not adding anything to the plant, just turning off something that's there that's negative and to make a resistant tree. And well, say, you know, it sounds like, oh, well, how long can that be before you get that worked out for citrus? But it's really already been done for, you mentioned earlier, citrus canker. One of our researchers was able to go in and use this new technology to develop a grapefruit variety that's resistant to citrus canker by just turning off a couple of genes responsible for that disease.
Okay, this sounds so like sci-fi. It sounds like science fiction. Like, how do you turn off a gene?
Oh, boy. That's a little beyond how I can explain.
That's going to be another show.
Yeah, that's a whole other show. But and there's different ways they do that. But I think the interesting thing is that this isn't a technology that's being used in citrus. It's been used recently in crops like rice, for example, where they've been able to turn off genes for a disease called powdery mildew in rice, where they had to constantly apply fungicides to rice to keep it growing. And now they've got a new rice variety that you don't have to apply those pesticides any longer because it's now resistant to powdery mildew. But it's also, this technology is being used for human health as well, because there's a lot of research on cancer and Parkinson's and things like that that's being done. So this new technology doesn't extend just to crops, but really it's going to touch all aspects of our life.
Yeah, it's just amazing how quickly things are becoming different with the study of genetics, not only in citrus, but also in people. It's so interesting. And I wanted to ask you about the weather changes and climate changes. Have you seen a lot of changes that have had an impact on citrus in Florida?
Well, I think everything year to year changes in Florida. I don't think there's 2 years since I've lived in Florida since 2004. And there's not been 2 years the same. So years where we've had a lot of rain, you know, it while the trees grow great, they tend to grow maybe more than we want them to. And so in the case of citrus greening and the psyllid, that insect that spreads the disease, when the trees are producing new leaves, those new leaves are what the psyllids feed on. And so it actually speeds up disease spread because the psyllids are feeding more on trees and they're reproducing faster. So, you know, while we welcome the rain, I look outside, it's raining here right now. You know, we welcome the rain, but it also causes the trees to grow more and attract more psyllids. So it's kind of a double-edged sword there.
Yeah, you can't just make them not have anything to drink. That doesn't work out either. Wow, do you see a lot of small farmers kind of either going out of business or changing over to things like peaches or blueberries because they've had it with the citrus?
Well, I think there's a lot of folks, you know, it's getting tight for people. And I think a lot of people don't want to get out of agriculture. They see the future. It does look promising for citrus down the road, but they've got to hold on until those solutions are there.
Yeah, you got to pay your bills in the meantime.
Yeah, and so there are a lot of people looking at diversifying. I mean, small growers and even some of the large growers. Things like peaches, blueberries, pomegranates. You know, just recently I met with the Olive Council, who was interested in trying to grow olives in Florida. So there's a lot of different minor crops that are being looked at here in Florida. It's kind of, if whether it's long-term or short-term alternatives until, you know, the situation with greening is resolved.
But it's just that juice industry that's kind of irreplaceable, because you're not going to be selling peach or blueberry juice. It's orange juice that people have for breakfast.
Yeah. Right, our oranges we grow for orange juice. We make the best tasting orange juice in the world. So, I was just in Europe just this last week and had a glass of orange juice, and I was like, wow, I miss, you know, what we have back home, because it's just so much better tasting here. And so, there's always going to be that market for Florida orange juice.
Yeah, it definitely is different. Do you feel a lot of pressure being at the helm of a center for citrus in a state where we're so heavily dependent on it?
I think we all feel pressure right now. Even as all of our researchers, you know, we're all in this together. Because without the citrus industry, we don't have a job as well. And, you know, we really partner with the growers, and, you know, we're out there with them. And so we see the hard time they're going through. We understand it, and all we can do is work as fast as we can trying to get solutions developed.
And you do a lot of these developments for agricultural, you know, folks, but, I mean, regular Joe homeowners, are they able to access your information or recommendations for, say, I want to plant a lime tree in my front yard, what would be best? Is that accessible?
Yeah, we have an extension outreach program, and so we routinely work with master gardeners. We have documents online through, it's what's called the EDIS, E-D-I-S system within UF. So there's a document, we just revised a document for homeowners just this past week that'll be out in the next couple of weeks, you know, talking about care of trees in the dooryard. So we respond to a lot of questions and calls from homeowners, and they're part of our clientele as well.
Well, a lot of people are bemoaning the greening issue, and it is a big deal. How do you feel overall about the future of the industry in Florida?
I'm very optimistic down the road that we're definitely going to have a solution for this, and citrus production is not going away in Florida. The problem we're facing right now is just a race against the clock, because every day, you know, people are making tough decisions on whether or not they're going to stay in the business. And, you know, that's the problem. It's just how much time do we have to keep people in this business?
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I want to thank you, Dr. Mike Roger, the director of the University of Florida Citrus Research and Education Center, and congratulations on your 100th anniversary this year.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Coming up, toxic waste is allegedly dumped right in the middle of a Fort Myers neighborhood, and a local newspaper reporter uncovered that story. We'll talk with that reporter and a pastor who lives in the Dunbar neighborhood when we come back. I'm Julie Glenn, and this is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.